Welcome to Pico Chat. I'm your host, Tony Sarkis. Two episodes in a row, I'm on a roll. I'm going to try to keep it up, but no promises. Though I love Pico 8, I sometimes have trouble finding material for this podcast, so I'm going to explore some other tiny games today, in addition to some great new Pico 8 stuff. As I was doing research for this episode, I noticed that there are currently no podcasts dedicated to game jams. Though I have no intention of turning PicoChat into a dedicated game jam podcast, it feels right to cover jams here if there's heavy Pico 8 representation. If you've participated in a jam, or if you come across one with an interesting theme, shoot it my way and we'll feature it in an episode. The recent Ludum Dare 41 jam had at least 10 Pico 8 entries, which is a great showing. In fact, one of the games I covered last week, RPGs Done Quick, is one of those games. The jam's theme was combine two incompatible genres, and the results were pretty excellent. I was especially happy to see so many little rhythm games, because I think everything would be better if it had a little bit more music in it. There were incredibly spirited entries in the jam that combined everything from fashion sim and arcade racer to classic arcade and survival horror. Predictably, not all of these offbeat combinations resulted in the next blockbuster game, but I truly respect the intellectual work that goes into marrying two seemingly impossible genres to each other. Ludum Dare has two types of entries, jam games, which can incorporate pre-made assets, music, and external libraries, and compo games, which must be built totally from scratch in 48 hours. Pico 8's extreme simplicity, limitations, and built-in editors make it very well suited to the compo category, I think, and I hope that the community continues to show the indie gaming scene what the fantasy console is capable of. We won't be discussing most of the Pico 8 entries from the jam, but I will link them in the show notes if you're curious about our representation in the event. After this brief break, I'll have my friend Kyle on to discuss some of his favorite games in the jam. Stick around. I'd like to welcome my guest, Kyle, back to Pico Chat. You might remember him from episode 2, in which we played and discussed every single game in the second Pico 8 jam. Say hi to everybody, Kyle.
Hey there. My name's Kyle. You might know me for being famous around the internet for having very good video game opinions.
It's like a big deal.
It's really true. Also, in preparation for this, I actually went back to look for that 3D Fish Painter game, which was my favorite game from that jam. It's still very good.
Oh my God, I need to retry it. I should go back and see how they hold up. I remember the weird pool one where you had to combine the colors. That one was good.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah. That was 2 years ago, though, so it's a lost to the ravages of time. So what do you think of the jam? Is the theme of combining incompatible genres, does that appeal to you?
So what I think of this in general is out of the jams that I've seen and out of the games that I've picked up in this kind of setup, this is probably my favorite theme that I've seen so far. Kind of taking these ideas that should be really disparate and things that don't mix. And I really think the games that stood out for me kind of leaned away from more popular ideas and really, really tried things that don't make any sense together. And I loved it. I thought there were really some really good standout games in this set.
Yeah. And creativity, you know, is the product of constraint, I think. So The fact that, you know, I am going to play a chess game that's also a roguelite. Mm-hmm. You know, how the hell does that work? What does that look like? And it's a really cool exercise to see these people struggle with that question and succeed. And I also like that the theme didn't constrain the setting of the games or the tone of the games or the narrative of the games. I think it left a lot of flexibility. And the results were pretty cool.
Do you know what it reminded me of was, it was really, really good. And I have to specify very, very good improv comedy where everyone has to yes and each other. Mm-hmm. And in this case, specifically, there are some games where, Okay, so we've got, oh, so, all right, so our two topics are match three and tower defense. And well, what can you do if with that? Okay, well, let's say that, all right, so you match the three things and it makes a defensive tower. All right, yeah, good. All right, so let's take that. But if you take three towers and you match those together, it makes an even bigger tower. Oh, that, yeah, that's perfect. You know, like that's how that felt to me. It would have been a lot of fun to be in the design, you know, just to overhear those conversations, I think.
Yeah. What was the weirdest combination game that you played?
So it's actually going to be one of the games that I want to talk about. And I don't know if you want us to go into the actual, our breakdowns, but the weirdest one that I played was Dungeon Scroll, which is a typing tutor / dungeon crawler.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, it was amazing.
So tell us about it.
So Dungeon Scroll, it's actually, as far as the design went, it was pretty well polished, I thought. And one of the way that it worked is that you had your little avatar, little character who is a little knight in 8-bit form, essentially. And to move around the room, to move around the area that the actual dungeon, you had to type random letters. And it wasn't just WASD. Oh my gosh, I'm gonna mess that up. I have good opinions, I swear.
WASD.
Real gamer. it wasn't just that, which is what I was expecting. But what instead it was just really random letters all over the keyboard, and you would move around, and not only would it be random letters, but it wasn't the same random letter every time. So every time you took a step, it changed all the letters. So you really had to, and this is the weird thing, I actually think I came out of it a better typist. Because it took time. I felt like I was poking different parts of my brain every time I, like, oh, okay, P, J, K, Z. Because you had to move around. And not only that, there was combat involved. So, the different ways that this played out was really interesting, because as you got into darker parts of the dungeon, or where there were enemies around, the different directional commands would change from single letters to words, to short words like cat or run or, you know, fly. And which to me made it seem like, oh, I have to, this is more stressful because I'm surrounded by enemies, or I have to get out of here because it's dark, it's hard to see, I can't really tell. So this is a struggle to do this. It was really, just incredible. An incredible idea there. And then to fight the enemies, of course, they would have words that popped up above their heads and you had to type, and they were, you know, six to eight letter words. So you had to type that quickly before they got an attack off.
Were the words related to the actual gameplay scene?
Sometimes. Yeah, sometimes they were. Those were a lot of fun. Like, there were ones that were like, like derelict, or like nausea or something like that. Like things like like traps and things like that.
Adventuring.
Yeah. But if you took too long typing a word to attack, it would change the word and you had to start over. The same thing went for like opening chests were 8-letter words, 6 to 8-letter words, which to me, again, you're picking the lock, which was really clever. I thought it was really well done. I played 4 levels of it before I died. And I couldn't stop. Like, I really wanted to go back, but I had already taken the time to play it. It was, the way that I thought about it, it just made my brain itch, like in a way that I haven't had a lot of games do. Like, I had to really reconsider how I was playing this game, because I couldn't just break into, oh, I'm going to use this spell on that monster and then open this chest. I have to type running, and then I have to type cat to get to the box, and then I have to type, you know, keychain or something to open up the box. I ended up in at the end of the run, I ended up getting killed by a mimic because I couldn't type the word to unlock it and then also the word to attack it quickly enough.
Oh, it was really good.
Yeah.
It's like Mavis Beacon teaches tomb raiding.
Oh yeah, that's exactly what it was.
And it, that's really cool.
It really put me in the mind of the old typing tutor games. And I mean, I would hand this game to a child any day to have them learn how to type. I think it was phenomenal.
That's great.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to circle back around and play it. The first one I wanted to highlight was Witchbeat. It's actually a game made in Pico 8 by Dragon16. And in it, you play a spirited young witch who has to rescue fairies from a dungeon who were imprisoned by a dragon. You have to collect all the fairies, and then you can open the boss door and then fight the dragon. But I was surprised with how spot on the rhythm gameplay was. If I can digress for just like 1 second and talk about how much I don't like Crypt of the Necrodancer. I know that people are probably gasping and like...
I just did.
Grabbing the table. It's not a good rhythm game. Like the only thing that the beat serves to do is give you like less than half a second to make each decision, but your accuracy or rhythm actually has nothing to do with the gameplay. It's just like you have a half second timer to make all your choices. So I don't really consider it a rhythm game, even though it's kind of, that's this whole thing. But in this game, you have to actually, attack on the beat or else you won't do anything, because for some reason the witch's electric magic only works if she tries firing lightning bolts exactly on the beat. So there's a really nice visual indicator. It's really polished, and it was made from scratch in Pico 8 in 48 hours, which I was really surprised with. But it's nailed rhythm gaming in Pico 8 like nothing I've played before, and I was really happy to see that. And I would love to see the concept expanded, because it's just one dungeon. You know, you rescue the 8 fairies, fight the dragon, and that's it. There are a lot of jokes packed in. Like, you get to the end of a corridor, and there are 2 fairies. And one's like, oh, what are the odds? We're both just behind this one door. It's almost as if the developer was running out of time or something. there are a lot of little quips based on the jam origin of the game written into the writing, and I really enjoyed it. But you should circle back and play it. I think it's a really great the art, and it has good music. It's the music I'm using for the intro and outro for this episode too. It really is the complete package, and in 48 hours I was very impressed. So kudos to you, Dragon16. I really loved it.
That really sounds wonderful. And I want to mention that actually hits on one of the themes I think was really interesting, that we had a lot of rhythm games in this, as well as the roguelikes, but a lot of rhythm games. And I didn't get to play that one, but I'm definitely going to have to, because a rhythm game in Pico 8 would be just phenomenal.
Yeah, it's good. And the movement doesn't have to happen on the rhythm. It's only the attacking, so you can like position yourself. It reduces a lot of the anxiety, I think, that Necrodancer has too in that regard. So what was the next game that entranced you from the jam?
So I really want to talk about Rogue Pawn. And this is one of the roguelites that we were talking about. But this one mixes in chess. And I appreciate this for 2 reasons. One, I don't like roguelites. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm terrible at them. I'm really bad. But I'm also really bad at chess.
Oh. But,
I've never been good at. But here's the thing. Putting those 2 things together actually made a really good game. And one of the first games out of the set that I played for this jam that I finished. Just, I went all the way with it because I thought, it was approachable in such a way that because I understand chess and I know what that is, like I could see the progression of the game. And like once I realized how to do the attacking, like it's really interesting because you play as a little chess piece, a pawn specifically. And you go and it's literally just a open world. You know, you go hang out or go out into the field essentially and you fight other pawns. And it's your adventure as this pawn to go try to defeat the rival king. And you end up fighting, to attack, you hop forward, like, especially, by the way, all of the world is made of chessboards, obviously. But to attack, you hop forward and it attacks like a pawn does.
Diagonally.
Yeah, well, the two spaces diagonally to you take damage. Mm-hmm. But when you're attacking other pawns, the same thing happens. So you end up doing stalemates, which is a real thing that happens in chess. And I mm-hmm. thought, holy cow. This is an adventure game, quote unquote, and I'm experiencing like chess strategy. Like I have to flank this guy in order to use it. Or to get past to beat a knight, you have to be able, you get inside the L and then you can hit them.
Mm-hmm.
You end up upgrading to a knight, to a rook, and then bishop, depending on how well you do in your run. And then eventually you have to take on the royalty of the other side of the board, which is really intense. Fighting a queen is just terrifying in ways that I never understood until I played this game. it was really interesting. And the thing is, like the way that it was developed encouraged strategy. It encouraged me to think in terms of these chess pieces. But it also gave me, because it's a roguelite, and the way that it's a little bit janky and it doesn't quite fit just right, but if you get in just this right way, you can kind of cheat the system a little bit. It encouraged me to just, button mash to get my way through it occasionally too. And I thought it was such a great way to put those two things together. Those two kind of themes of gameplay where, okay, if I move here, this is going to be the best position. And then also, I just got to press A a lot to get through here.
That's interesting too. I feel like Rogue itself was probably heavily inspired by chess, right? Like it's a grid based, you take turns moving with the enemy.
That's true.
It's all about position. Like I would not be surprised if the genre itself came from chess. I'm sure this is easily researchable with a Wikipedia query, but it's cool to circle back that way to actually inhabit a pawn.
One little note that I really enjoyed about it is that you could unlock the different hats, so to speak, for your pawn, and there were standard upgrades in health, etc. But I really enjoyed that you could just to be a knight, you just put on a horse head, essentially. To be a rook, you put on the little tower face. And to be a bishop, it wasn't an actual bishop's hat, as far as I can tell. It looked more just like a mage's hat, but mm-hmm. you just put on the hat. And again, that felt very chess, and a roguelite at the same time. So I thought it was phenomenal. I had a lot of fun with it. I really would like to see. Well, the game is, it's about the length of a chess game. Mm-hmm. I don't know what more they could do with it, but I really liked what they did. I thought it was really well done.
That's great. I'll put it in the show notes, and I'm looking forward to playing it too.
Cool.
Birkenoid was the next thing I played, and I thought it was fascinating. So it was Arkanoid, as you can probably guess from the name, mixed with a card game. So as your ball, you moved your paddle. There was no paddle. I think it was just the ball itself was bouncing around haphazardly, breaking bricks, as they are wont to do in these types of games. But you have a hand of cards on the bottom of the screen. And they each say something like snipe or northeast or shield. And if you play a card at any moment, the ball does whatever the card says. So if the ball's about to go careening down into a pit, you can play a card to redirect it. Or you can play a shield card to protect it from being destroyed. And so you're just trying to break all the bricks. You're kind of waiting for your ball to be in the exact right position. Then you use a card quickly. While you're debating which card to use, the time slows down significantly, so you can kind of like aim a shot, play a card at the right moment. You feel like it's almost like Yu-Gi-Oh. You're like, well, how do you deal with my northeast card? take out the evil bricks.
I was going to ask if there was a trap card, because please
no, just defensive ones, unfortunately. It's fast paced enough to keep you on your toes, since you're like trying to appraise the cards in your hand and decide what in that moment will help you finish the game. But it's very fast paced too, with some pretty cool strategy. So I think that's worth checking out.
I want to ask, how many games do you see with a card based system attached as one of the games?
I saw several, but they were all past the first page. There was one that was like a Street Fighter type fighting game.
What?
But all of your moves were, it was like a deck building game too. So you chose like which deck you wanted, which cards you wanted, and then you would play them to execute the moves in the Street Fighter like game. It was kind of a mess. I couldn't, I love cards and I love the idea of them, but I feel like they were harder to marry to other genres than roguelites, right? Which is basically just like you do a single run, it's procedurally generated. Like there's a list of criteria that fit in a lot of different genres, I think. Or you could put a lot of different mechanics in there. So I think that works better than cards, but this was an interesting one and I thought it was successful.
Yeah, I think one of the things that worked best for me in these games is when they took things that, yeah, when they were so hard, like the systems themselves would have been hard to implement. And that's what I found the most interesting, I think. But as I move on to my other game here.
I think we have time for one more, and then we'll put we played some more games, and I'm going to put those in the show notes, so I'll make sure to check those. But so one more.
Okay, I do want to talk about Crescendo. This was one of the top rated ones for the jam, for good reason, I think. So this was a stealth game mixed with a rhythm game, and you play I can't read it as anything other than a ninja who's trying to break into a facility to steal these orbs. But in order to make movement around the room, everything you do makes noise. But and there's a little meter that reads how much noise you're making. Walking makes a noise, jumping makes a noise. And then you can kind of shift or teleport forward a few spaces, and that makes a ton of noise. But in order to get through the rooms without getting heard, there's background music playing. And there's another meter reading how loud that music is. And you have to make your way around the room to basically turn the volume up at different points in the room so that it gets loud enough that you can grab the orb and get out. And the music plays at a particular rhythm, and you can see where it gets loudest at particular points. But once you get the orb, whereas in other rhythm games, you have like the music plays and it's there for you to keep the beat, and it punishes you if you don't. Once you have the orb, the music stops and you can't, it's still playing, but you can't hear it anymore. And now you just have to remember the beat.
Is there any kind of like tempo indicator or anything?
The volume indicator stays on, so you can see that. But if you don't remember if you don't remember the tempo, or if you don't remember where in the song the loud points are, you are going to be, you're going to have a hard time getting out. And I did have a little bit of what you mentioned, kind of the anxiety of rhythm games of like, I can only move on this beat, you know, because you have to deal with like metal floors,
right,
or making jumps, or, you know, but it's, there were so many interesting ideas here. It really felt like N plus, like that. It really felt like that game, like that ninja, mm-hmm, like wall scaling and things like that. But there were no enemies at all. It was only you against yourself and that rhythm.
And then if you were too loud or offbeat, would it just trigger a fail state?
Yep. And it just reset the room. And it was, so you would, So if you messed up the beat at any point, essentially, you just redid the room. And thankfully, it would just kick you right back so that there was almost no time lost, which is, you know, another thing that I appreciate about modern gaming.
I love a generous checkpoint.
Isn't it nice?
You know.
You do have to, like, it is very much, you have to, you know, find that rhythm and stick with it, or it's not going to go well. And they do some really interesting things with what they ask you to do to the rhythm, as far as jumping and teleporting and things. I really liked it. I thought the music, because for a game like this, music's very important.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the music was really well made, actually.
Oh, that's great.
I was surprised. And again, here are two game styles that I'm terrible at. I'm really bad at both of them. But put together, I had a lot of fun.
I love that. And this, it sounds really up my alley, too. I'm surprised I overlooked it. But I think this is going to be the first one I play after the episode.
I think you'll like it a lot, yeah.
I think so, too. Well, Kyle, thank you so much for joining me again. You're officially my jam buddy at this point.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. Jam buddies for life.
Perfect. And I look forward to having you on again.
I can't wait. Let's get some more of these really interesting games, and especially, you know, well, like made over a weekend. They come up with some of the best ideas, I think.
Yeah. When you don't have time to second guess your weird ass idea, that's when the magic happens.
That's right.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
That's it for episode 5. Thanks so much for sticking with me. I don't want to set your expectations too high. I don't think I'll be recording a new episode every week, but I'll try my best. If you'd like to be a guest on a future episode or have material you would like me to cover, shoot me an email at tony@electrobureau.com. Links in the show notes. Thanks so much.